You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Our minds are powerful, but using them to its full potential can be difficult or run counter to the way life comes at us. Slowing down, processing, reflecting, sitting with oneself can be easier said than done. But there is growing awareness and acceptance in the power of mindfulness meditation and its ability to alleviate chronic stress, suffering, and increase compassion. Joining us are three researchers studying how our brains function in the name of contemplative science. Aaliyah Skowara, Quinn Conklin, and Clifford Sarin are researchers at the UC Davis Center for Mind and Brain. And in addition to sharing their work, they're also joining us ahead of a free day-long summit open to the public on mindfulness and compassion that's going to be held at the Mondavi Center at UC Davis this Friday. It includes talks on restorative justice, peacemaking, mindfulness-based stress reduction, improving attention in high-demand professions, effects of fear on memory, among other important topics. So with that, good morning to you all. Welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Good morning.
Good morning. So we're going to talk about the summit in just a few moments. But first, we're talking about a broad field of study that may be new for some people. So let's start big. Clifford, I want to start with you. How do you explain contemplative science outside of academia?
So contemplative science is an umbrella term that has come to represent the broad spectrum of research efforts looking at the effects of a variety of meditative or contemplative practices. Those practices include everything from Christian-centering prayer to yoga to Tai Chi, and often sitting meditation and interventions such as mindfulness-based stress reduction and other mindfulness-based interventions, and also the general idea that there are effects of quiescence, of quieting down, and of engaging with the world around you with a little less urgency. And those things are more informal, but people study. I should also mention there are many apps now, and you can find many people. You find ads on media and television for apps like Calm or Headspace. And this has now become a large business segment, and people are interested in understanding the effects of these widely deployed interventions that come from traditional settings where there were people in touch with a teacher who could interact with them directly.
Please keep going, Clifford.
Well, the other sense of contemplative science is the fact that science can be conducted in a contemplative way, where there is a sense of really holding questions for long periods of time and really reaching into the fundamental beauty and artistry of the craft, the conduct of science.
The Sarin Lab is named after you. How did this come about?
Well, it came about because I was in contact over a long period of time with the founding director of the Center for Mind and Brain at UC Davis, Ron Mangan. And he offered me a position early in its founding. And through that, I was able to garner resources and funding to have the opportunity to work with extraordinary students and scholars, two of whom are sitting with you right now.
Exactly. And that brings me to Quinn and Aaliyah. You both are research scholars. What drew you to this field of study?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, for me, it really was a question of compassion and how we relate to others' suffering. I was one of the kids who, you know, couldn't even see someone else cry without bursting into tears myself, right? And on one end of the compassion spectrum, right, you have that of empathic distress is what we call it in a research term. And on the other side, you might have cold, callous, kind of shut down. And as someone who's on one far end, there's really this question of how can we learn to be with this in ways that are adaptive and actually can offer help and be of service when the opportunity arises. And so it's been a lifelong question, and contemplative practices really do offer an avenue into that. So that's what drew me into it.
How about you, Quinn?
I have continued to be interested in the connections between mind and body. And so I have, in my undergraduate education, I studied psychology and biology, but was also training in practices like yoga and Pilates. And so I've been very interested in how our minds affect our bodies and how we can train our minds to have different outcomes in the body.
Yeah. I mean, you look at this through the lens of adversity and trauma, and you use these practices for healing, to facilitate healing. What are you learning about how beneficial this can be?
We have a lot to learn yet. We're still sort of investigating the landscape and what markers might be of interest. The thing that I have focused on primarily in my investigation so far is a marker called telomere length. And that is something, it's the cap at the ends of our chromosomes. And
like from stress or chronic stress, and it shortens,
they
correct?
Can be shortened by stress, or at least that's the theory that we're working with right now. And so I've also been investigating whether meditation training can mitigate some of that stressful consequence.
Yeah, we had a conversation about that not too long ago for the new year, so that's why I learned about that. Mm-hmm. You know, Aaliyah, when doing a little research on you, I saw a video that you entered as part of the UC Davis Grand Slam, and you really used this quick but really useful meditation to show how our brains are flexible and that compassion is a skill that can actually be learned. How can we use this in everyday life?
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's a whole host of ways that we can use it. But one way is really, if you don't have a sitting practice, which the sitting practice is kind of how you start to build these capacities. So there's deep value in practicing on the mat in meditation. But the goal of that is to bring it into daily life, like you say. So even if you don't have a sitting practice, when you feel pain, difficulty, or you see that in someone else, really taking a moment to take a deep breath, be with that pain and offer care. And it can just be a moment, just a moment of recognizing that you're interconnected and that just like you, that person does not wish to suffer and wishing that they be free of it, even if that wish does nothing, right? If we go into the metaphysics of it, right? Like whether that wish does something or not, the intention that they be free of it starts to slowly shift things within you and in how you relate to suffering and how you connect to that and others.
I also found it so interesting. I mean, this field is so broad, right? And there's so much to know. The more we know, the less we understand, the more we do research, right? You look at the intersection of mental health and immigration and essentially being re-traumatized. How did this research come to be?
I really felt the need to ensure that everything I'd learned, all these skills I'd built in the crucible that is getting a PhD, made a difference in the world. And so Cliff actually connected me with two researchers, Dr. Marius Koga and then Professor Raquel Aldana, who's a professor at the UC Davis School of Law, who have this amazing group that looks at bridging the gap between the law and science in immigration cases. And so they already had this consortium going on and invited us in to offer a neuroscientific perspective. My training is as a cognitive neuroscientist. And as we did that, we realized that there's a lot that we already know about trauma in the brain, trauma and autobiographical memory that isn't applied in immigration cases. And so even without shifting necessarily the laws within the system, there's a lot of space to create a kinder, more compassionate, truly more fair and just system by creating some more understanding and some more science-informed approaches to how we look at memory in immigration cases.
Yeah, because in many cases, they are coming from our opportunity, but also seeking asylum. They are actually leaving trauma, and then asking them to replay that out to stay here legally is re-traumatizing.
Right. The very having to replay it can be re-traumatizing, and also the expectation that they should be able to tell a linear narrative of what happened to them, and that should be consistent between retellings, is at odds with everything we understand about trauma and autobiographical memory.
Yeah. Cliff, I mean, this is also expanding along current events. I mean, the pandemic has really changed how we live and how we interact on just so many levels. Where does this practice come in, contemplative science?
So I think the pandemic has been a remarkable catalyst, and the pandemic and global disruption and current events and the revealing of the profound inequities in our society and the immense disproportionate suffering in individuals represented or in marginalized populations has given rise to a recognition that there is so much broken that needs fixing that it's often overwhelming. And so the role of our research intent, and I believe the intent of many of these practices, is, as Aaliyah has been talking about, being able to engage with the conditions of the world without being overwhelmed. And part of that is knowing intimately how our own lives represent the commonality of the basic human condition.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about a summit on mindfulness and compassion that's taking place on Friday. It is free and open to the public at the Mondavi Center at UC Davis. So let's get to the summit in just a moment. Clifford, I see you pointing. You have another point to add.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that in a very practical sense, the pandemic catalyzed our need to figure out how to begin to do research projects out of the lab. And that's part of what the genesis of the summit is about. And that involved both understanding technical methods where we can now record, say, physiology like heart rate using very sophisticated research versions of the Fitbit, or even track where you might be looking on a screen using a webcam like you're seeing me now. But also much more emphasis on the local conditions of people's lives and moving away from the sort of narrative that if you just sit down for X number of minutes, turn on this app, your life will be transformed, which is often not the case. And moments, incidental moments of insight about your life may be transformative through circumstances that are so not predictable.
Yeah. I mean, that's really profound. I mean, Quinn, as Clifford just said, the summit on Friday is called Out of the Lab and Into the World, the next chapter of contemplative science. Since it is free and open to the public, what do you want the public to know about this summit?
We are really interested in building connections with people and making our work and our research more accessible to broader audiences. So that might mean other researchers, meditation teachers, mental health clinicians, but also people who are just generally interested in learning more about what the pros and cons of meditation practice might be, and how we think about the research, because there's a lot that can get really concretized in scientific research, so assumptions and things that we think we know. And so it's really important to keep an open mind and to consider the broader picture of how these practices fit into people's lives and how different contextual factors might affect the outcome of certain types of practice.
Aaliyah, this summit is both online. It's also in person at the Mondavi Center on campus. It's a full day. It's like from 9 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. What will that experience be like?
Yeah, so we have crafted a day based on three topics within this general theme of out of the lab and into the world. So it's organized in a series of kind of three sets of three talks each. People can expect to hear from world-renowned scholars, scientists, researchers who work in this area. And then we've also tried to leave time for questions and discussion so that it's not just being talked at and there's space to really engage together. So in terms of the general structure of the day, people can expect that. And I can get more into each of what each of the summits will be if you want.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many topics from restorative justice to peacemaking to improving attention in high demand professions, the effects of fear on memory. And that's just a few of the several. I mean, what went into curating this summit?
We had the incredible opportunity to come together with funds from the Chen Foundation and basically say, what do we want to talk about? What do we think the most pressing questions in contemplative science are? So we sat down together as a research group, the three of us, and then also our colleague Brandon King, who's not here this morning, and really said, you know, what do we think if we got to bring together our favorite scientists to have this conversation, our favorite researchers and thinkers, what would we want to hear from? Who would we want to hear from? What would we want to talk about? And that's how this came together.
Quinn, what excites you most about this summit?
I'm really looking forward to the whole arc of the day. We will be starting out with kind of our current work and thinking, and a lot of which was brought about, like Cliff said, by the pandemic and this necessity to get out of the lab and connect with people out in the world. But what we're excited about and what comes out of that is this new kind of stance toward investigating different contextual factors, so being able to research, conduct our research in different places and in people's lives, and then thinking about the application of these practices too. And so how will these practices affect people out in the world, and bridging the laboratory science with applied science. Mm-hmm. And so I think we've got a really amazing group of people to kind of connect all of those dots.
I mean, given that this is all three of your wheelhouses and you curated this summit, I imagine you're just excited to learn yourself, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's actually the day after my birthday. And I was like, this is the best birthday present ever. I get to hang out with all of these wonderful thinkers. So it's wonderful. Yeah,
that is the best gift. Clifford, what do you hope people take away from this summit?
Well, I think that one of the things that we want to bring out is that science has an opportunity now to reshape itself into a more human participatory endeavor than has typically been done in the past. And so one of the points of the summit is really to bring online the humanity of researchers and the humanity of research participants, joining together to inquire into the nature of existence and life and to think about the adequacy or inadequacy of the tools that we typically do to engage in those sorts of efforts. And that's a self-reflective process on all sides, because often the research that is getting the publicity has not been done on diverse populations. The press wants a soundbite from the most complex thing we know, which the human and the in its full contextualized environment, which includes the natural non-human world. And so it's very easy to have oversimple narratives that make you feel like you understand, and then you expect, if I do this, I will get that. And I think our commitment overall is to question that instrumentality and bring it into a sense of open, inclusive inquiry. And it's a wonderful confluence that the Ten Kiao Chen and Chrissy Chen Institute was interested in promoting interdisciplinary meetings to a variety of academic institutions. And we were able to partner with them at this time to bring this forward.
Well, it's going to be a wonderful event. Thank you all three for joining us this morning.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Aliyah Skowara, Quinn Conklin, and Clifford Sarin are researchers at the UC Davis Center for Mind and Brain. And they're talking about a free summit on mindfulness and compassion that's taking place this Friday that is open to the public at the Mondavi Center at UC Davis. We have a link for registration on our Insight page. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.